I went to college to become a public school teacher.
And I was a product of public school. My mom was a public school teacher for 30 years.
But when we had our own kids, our perspectives slowly began to change.
Now that we've experienced Christian school for our daughter, we can't imagine doing it any other way. I'm Chris Stigall.
And I'm Christine Stigall. We hope you'll join us with your kids in Making the Leap.
A lot of students don't know what they're going to face on campus until they get there, and then they feel so alone. That's why in the book title, you know, I called it, like, You're Not Alone, The Conservative Woman's Guide to College, because these students feel like they're alone. They feel like they're facing something for the first time.
Welcome back to another episode of Making the Leap. We're so glad that we have you with us today. We are excited. One of the things that you and I, Chris, have been talking about is just we're constantly, obviously, we're always talking about Christian education, but kind of expanding to talk more culturally as well.
Yep.
And so we're always looking for ways to bring in more of those conversations that really, whether directly or indirectly, affect education. And this is one today. We are speaking today with Karen Lipps, and she is the founder of the Network of Enlightened Women. So that's NEW. We'll put all this down below. But we've got Karen with us today. Karen, we're so excited to have you.
I'm looking forward to our conversation. Thanks so much for having me.
Karen, by the way, may I just mention the podcast? I love the name of the podcast, Problematic Women. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was fun to be on that one.
That was a good
one. We've got our own podcast.
Yes.
The Conservative Woman's Guide.
Which I loved, the Conservative Woman's Guide. That one was, I started going in, I just listening, and I thought, well, this is massively helpful. I know we need to back up and kind of give a little, you know, info, but just the fact that there, there is something for all these women and probably a lot of males heading off to kind of navigate the university world where conservative viewpoints are not the norm and not always welcomed well. So I think it's fantastic. We've got a lot to dive into. You are an author. You've written a book that helps college women kind of navigate college. You are hosting a podcast. You are a senior fellow with Independent Network. Sorry, I always mess this one up. You are with the Independent Women's Forum. I know there's different versions. And so much, I think, that you have done probably has helped kind of formulate where you're at, kind of guiding that next generation through.
Yes, I think I've been lucky to been able to find work that I really enjoy and find great meaning from. You know, when I started the Network of Enlightened Women, known as NEW, I was a college student at the University of Virginia. And it's fun to think that back then, like, taking some initiative, being self-motivated and starting this organization has now, you know, led to the work that I'm doing now. So I started the organization after I had interned in Washington, D.C. I was frustrated that when I returned to the University of Virginia, the women's groups weren't really open to conservative women. I even went to our women's center and asked if they might co-sponsor a new group for conservative women. And the faculty member there looked at me like I was crazy, chuckled, and said, not here.
Wow.
And so then I started NEW and started it as a community and an educational organization to educate and empower young conservative women on campus who were really looking for a community, one that they couldn't find in the Women's Center, the Women's Studies Department, or these other groups and institutions, which were supposedly there to help women. But they really had a narrow definition and a narrow view of what women should want and should think about and what they should think. And so this just gave some intellectual diversity to campus and an intellectual home for conservative women on campus.
Karen, young men are actually growing in their, at least politically, as I read surveys say, young men seem to be growing in their kind of conservative belief systems, voting habits, things like that. Women, though, I'm not one, so I won't speak for them, but I will say it seems to me now more than ever to be a young woman is to be under an enormous amount of pressure to look at everything through a secular, cultural, left-wing lens. True or false?
You're right that there's so much pressure, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because what I think we underestimate, those of us who aren't in college anymore, is all the pressure that they face. It's not just pressure from faculty members who might have bias and might be unfair liberal professors and sort of pushing students left. They might also face it from administrators who are approving different clubs and giving out the funding for clubs and deciding the programming on programming that students get on campus. And then they also face it from their peers. It's remarkable the amount of pressure our students face. In the first book that I edited, She's Conservative, Stories of Trials and Triumphs on America's College Campuses, one of the themes that emerged is that a number of the women decided to keep their conservative views quiet before they even stepped foot on campus. And that just shows you how prevalent that pressure is and how important it is that they've got this guidebook and other resources to truly empower them.
You know, we talk a lot here just about Christianity and how it, you know, we actually talk more about Christian education as a whole. However, I mean, I think we all know, you know, conservative does not necessarily mean Christian. Christian does not necessarily mean conservative. But if you put those two together, I think that's, this appealed to me a lot as I thought about our own daughter as she's navigating high school and getting ready to head off to the next, whatever that next step may be. I feel like this applies as well, because I think there's, if you're sitting in Genesis and you have any kind of belief that that's true, that God created men and women, just speaking with the gender issue alone, I would imagine you've probably heard stories across the board of even just where that basic premise has got to be, as I would say, received hostily in places.
Karen, I've always boiled it down to whether people are nice or whether they're mean. And I think women, young women, my daughter's age, for instance, often thinks, gosh, it's mean to say there are genders, that you're born a man and you're born a woman. That's mean. I don't want to be mean to anybody. I think women are uniquely under pressure to not seem mean, Karen.
Well, the social pressure is definitely real, and the social ostracization is real. It's interesting. In the book, I cite a few studies that show, for example, Democrats are less likely to be friends with or date somebody with the opposing views or for somebody who voted for the opposing presidential candidate than Republicans. And so when you boil it down, you know, we already have more liberal women than conservative women on campus. About 58% of college women self-identify as liberal compared to 15% of conservative. Then you add in this peer pressure, and for many of the students we work with, it really seems like, you know, it's 90% liberal, and they feel that social pressure. And so one of the things we do in New is try to normalize conservatism among women, give them guides and resources in that community to strengthen them and encourage them in their beliefs.
Where are you? You're nationwide, I'm assuming. I know your book is on sale through Amazon, and we will definitely include a link for that. But nationally, across the board, you know, when we look at places, how does somebody plug into New? How do they find you if you're not there? Can they start? Does it work like IWF, where you can, you know, kind of create your own chapter, so to speak? Can you talk a little bit about that?
I love this question. Yes. Our leaders are amazing women who are self-motivated and take the initiative. They often reach out to us. You can go to our website at enlightenedwomen.org or email our chapters teams just at chapters@enlightenedwomen.org and take that first step. And then someone on our national organizations team will reach out to them, have a conversation, work with them to get a chapter started.
How many chapters? I interrupted you. Keep going. I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
So we've got chapters on more than 60 campuses around the country where these women are bringing in speakers, hosting debates, having professional development events, doing service projects, just educating, really trying to educate their community and their fellow students on conservative views and then encourage each other to speak up. So we've got the chapters, and then also on top of that have a suite of national programs, including our leadership retreat, where we bring together our top leaders from around the country for a weekend retreat, and then host some intern summits. So we've actually got one coming up later this week in Washington, D.C. for interns to get plugged in. So we're always excited to find young women who want to be part of our community. If they're not already, I encourage them to follow us on Instagram at @enlightenedwomen. That's a great way to get a lot of our content and to get plugged in.
You know, Karen, one of the things that I have said to Riley Gaines before, and she's made obviously great headway in advocating for women and women's sports and women maintaining their own personal and private space for locker rooms and things like that. That's an amazing development here recently, culturally. And I say recently, I know maybe it's not really recent, but it seems thrust in our faces in a recent way. Women, and I don't, you're an enlightened woman, obviously, so you know this, but I've said this 1,000 times on my radio show. It seems like the extermination of women, the very definition of woman, if you eradicate the definition of what a woman even is, well, then, I mean, what have you? It seems like that could open a Pandora's box of nightmares for women who have fought very hard for rights and inclusivity and things like Title IX. It just seems like a tremendous step backwards if, in fact, you are an enlightened woman to say men make the best women.
Well, on this issue, language matters.
Yes.
And it actually has, you know, serious consequences for women, right? I mean, medically, right? Like, women and men are different and might, you know, respond to medicine different, for example. Mm-hmm. There's been other studies on different issues where it actually does women a disservice if you don't divide out women and men and research how things impact them differently. So I think it's important that we stand up for women. A lot of our chapters have been co-hosting Riley Gaines on campus. And what's fascinating about this issue is I think they're reaching people across the aisle on it. So I think it's a good issue for our chapters to be bringing speakers on and really educating their campus community on different aspects and getting the whole story. And Riley has a truly compelling story.
She really does. And we've had the pleasure. Chris has spoken with her before. We've spoken with her. She's just, that's where I am in awe of it. It's not just like I think I said earlier, like the next generation. She's part of that coming up through and kind of pushing back in a way that I don't see as many people in our generation or even older doing. And so I think it's so great to start at this university level or even the high school level to kind of instill that confidence. And it's just been something neat to watch.
Well, I think one of the challenges is a lot of students don't know what they're going to face on campus until they get there. And then they feel so alone. That's why in the book title, you know, I called it like, "You're Not Alone, The Conservative Woman's Guide to College," because these students feel like they're alone. They feel like they're facing something for the first time. And so that's why I include in the book examples of, you know, what are some threats and challenges you might face? It might be you're trying to host an event on the issue of women in sports, which we had at one of our universities in Boston, and the administration basically, you know, shut down the event and they had to reschedule it because they didn't get approval in time. And so they really had to go through hoops to do that. You know, other times it's threats to free speech. I write about biased reporting systems and speech codes and free speech zones. So one of the things in this book is it's you know, meant for students, but I also think it's great for people who are that one phone call away, right? So maybe you as a parent to your daughter, right. You know, when she faces something, if you've read this book, then you might understand, okay, like, I don't think this is a one-off thing or, you know, one-time thing. This is part of a larger trend where, you know, voices are being silenced and suppressed. And so then you can try to figure out what resources you need, what are the solutions. So it's not just for the students, but also for the parents and grandparents and those people one phone call away who want to support their students when they're on campus.
I agree with that. I thought a lot about that, actually, because my gut reaction sometimes as a parent is, or as I guess not even as a parent, as an adult, is I've come into my space of saying that is ridiculous and I do not need to waste time and pay attention to that. But they're not there yet. They're 18, they're 19, and they're just starting and they're figuring that out. One of those situations, I specifically was listening to the podcast. I think it was a podcast episode or maybe it was an interview where you were talking about how to handle a hostile professor.
Yes.
And I think that is probably, I would say, what I would envision as one of the challenges. I know our son had a paper he had to write about masculinity. I read a lot of what he wrote. I stared at him and he was like, "I don't believe this, Mom, but this is what I have to do or my teacher's going to come back at me." And I thought, that number one, that stinks. Like that's the worst thing ever, right? Because you're not even engaging in any kind of debate. But as a parent, how to handle, like how to encourage that. And I wondered if you would mind sharing just a few of the little, I guess, tips or pieces of advice, someone that might be listening that maybe wants to go get this book. But that's a specific topic that I know you address.
Yes, it is, because that's one of the common challenges that students face on campus these days. And I wrote a whole chapter on it. And I very much at the beginning distinguished between dealing with liberal professors and dealing with unfair liberal professors.
Right.
Because I do think, you know, there's a lot of liberal professors out there who are fair and, you know, are great professors on campus. But then there are those who are just unfair and they're biased and they don't treat conservative students the same. And so I share in this book, and what I do throughout the book is I try to identify potential problems and then identify strategies and then encourage students to ask the question, you know, what would be productive in this situation? And so they really approach it, I hope, very purposely, very intentionally for how, you know, what strategies they want to employ and how they deal with the situation. So when it comes to unfair liberal professors, first, I would recommend trying to avoid them. Try to get to know those upperclassmen. They will often spread the word via word of mouth about who's really just unfair because it's just such a tough situation. So if you can, try to avoid. Another strategy is in class, really ask that question. When is it going to be productive to speak up? Because you might have lots and lots and lots of things to challenge, but it might not always turn out the way you hope after you challenge them. So try to figure out, can I move the conversation forward? Will this be fruitful? Will this change someone's mind? You know, be purposeful about when you do speak up. And then one other strategy I recommend is try to find liberals who believe what you do on an issue, where you found common ground, and then cite them in papers. So, for example, Barack Obama spoke about how it's not good to just shut down the other side on campus. So if you're going to be making a free speech point, see if you can cite him. Try to find some sources that might speak to your professor there. So there's a few strategies in there of how to deal with those situations. But the first thing is just identifying it, recognizing it. So then you can kind of figure out your path forward.
Karen, do you think culturally speaking, it's important for women to engage, you know, not just on politics and not just on the locker room and sports, all important. But I'm curious about this new derisive term that I hear thrown around a lot called trad wives, traditional wives, women who would aspire to become mothers and wives and maybe, dare I say, even homeschool moms or full-time mothers in home. There's a real hostility there for younger women, is there not?
Well, I think it's fascinating that when I was in school, I felt like there was a lot of pressure to really focus on your career. And then we've almost seen the pendulum swung that then there's been the trad wife movement where it's focused on social media, glorifying kind of what they would say is like traditional wives. But what's fascinating to me is in looking in the data that a majority of women with small children actually are interested in some type of part-time work. And so what I'm interested in, one of the things I talk a lot about and write on, is opportunity feminism, or a brand of feminism that seeks to maximize freedom for women so they can build the lives they want. And with that, it might be focusing solely on careers. It might be being a trad wife. But for a lot of women, I actually think it's somewhere in the middle. And so I'd love to see more options for women to be able to on-ramp and off-ramp, for women to be able to find part-time opportunities, which are often very, very tough to find in the economy, flexible work. And we've seen, for example, post-COVID, some companies remove remote work again, which was very beneficial for a lot of women with small children. So I would love to see our economy become more flexible and for us no longer to try to fit women just in a box of like, you know, we've got to make sure everybody has a 9-to-5 job when that's not actually what the majority of women want.
Hey. Yeah, that's a big job too, because that is, I mean, in the social media world, you can't even make the statement of saying, I feel at least, you can't make the statement saying, you know, it's important for me to be home with my kids without feeling like their toes are being stepped on. And so that's a big area to cover, but I believe it and I see it. I don't know many women right now who aren't doing something small, that sort of side. I don't buy into the whole like, you know, hustle, 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 but like there's a lot of people that want to do something. Their kids see them working. There's value to that. But at the same time, they need it for their family. They need it financially. They need some kind of option that maybe doesn't involve that 9 to 5. And I think when I was, you know, reading your, that idea of that opportunity, you know, feminism, I thought, well, that's an interesting way to not let feminism be the awful word that I think it is in a lot of circles, or the only word, you know, that it is in other circles. Like, I think it's a neat way to kind of mesh that, put that in the middle. And so I really was like, I'm going to be reading more about that, because it is something that speaks to me as a mom. I watch my kids. My kids are growing up and they're going to be young parents. My daughter being a young mom. My boys, who are you marrying? You know, what are you looking for? And what do they want as why, you know, for wives and for them as mothers? I think it's an important topic. So, well, I love that you have that.
I'm glad it speaks to you. And I'm happy to share that we've just had a victory on this front. So this is a little bit in the weeds, but I think it's a good example about how women can identify issue areas where we actually need reform. And that gives more women more opportunities. So my background is in law. I used to practice mm-hmm. a law at a law firm. And one of my law school classmates came to me and said that she ended up having to take multiple bar exams. And it turns out that in Tennessee, they had a full-time work requirement for you to be eligible for admission without examination. So the practice of law is regulated by the states.
Wow.
You've got to sit for the bar exam to, you know, get your license in the state. And, you know, that's a pretty big barrier to entry. It costs money. It costs time. And so she had to sit for this exam, even though she had been practicing law for years. She just had made the decision to reduce her hours and not work full time because she had young children at home.
Mm-hmm.
So basically she was penalized because of her decision to reduce her hours. And that didn't speak to her competency. It just spoke to her priorities and her life choices. And so it was really frustrating for her. So at New, we filed a petition with the Supreme Court of Tennessee to try to get the full-time work requirement removed. It's now been 2 years. We're still waiting, but wow. They opened it up to comment period. All the comments were in support of it. And then last year we filed in Tennessee, in Ohio as well, because there's just a handful of states that have this full-time work requirement. And I'm delighted to share that actually starting April 1, so this month, they removed the full-time work requirement. So just by submitting that letter, submitting comments, now if you are a part-time lawyer who moves to the state of Ohio, you are not ineligible just because you reduced your hours. You could possibly be admitted without having to sit for the bar exam. So
that's awesome.
Again, in the weeds, but I think that's such a great example mm-hmm. of opportunity feminism at work in terms of identifying, you know, a problem, trying to fix it to give people more opportunity to build the lives that in the way they want to build them.
You know, Karen, that's incredible. congratulations on the victory.
Thank you.
It's a tremendous accomplishment. And there's another woman in corporate America, or formerly, you're probably familiar with her name, Jennifer Say, who was the former CEO, soon to be CEO of Levi's. She was on a trajectory to probably run Levi's. Mm-hmm. And it was during COVID that Jennifer simply said, I think our kids ought to be back in school. And for this, basically, the board said, you need to stop talking about that. It's upsetting the youngsters here at Levi's. And so what's really interesting in corporate America for women like Jennifer, at high levels, if they hold a position that is not conformist, they can literally be run out of, you know, the number two post in a company like Levi's. Mm-hmm. And now she talks openly about that. And she, by no means, is any kind of conservative Republican.
Well, one of the biggest failings of the feminist movement right now is this idea that women are a monolithic voting bloc and they all have to think the same. You know, I think a true sign of sexual movement and of feminism would be if they could recognize that women think differently. That should be considered a victory, right? Is recognizing women for the smart, thinking, capable human beings that we are. But unfortunately, modern feminism often has this view that if you don't march in lockstep with our views, right, like with one side, then you don't count as a woman or your views don't count. And that's just such a major failing of feminism. And that's why I think women are looking for an alternative. There's a lot of women out there who want to be part of a women's empowerment movement, want to cheer on fellow women, want to help them out, want to advance policies for women. yet that modern feminism is uncomfortable and doesn't fit because it's so negative towards women who just don't think the exact same. So I think you've identified a true problem, that this idea that, you know, you've got to think one way or you don't count or you're out. That's a real problem with feminism.
It is. I think it's just for society. It's probably one of the most detrimental problems that we have. I run across it even within conservative circles where, you know, you're out if you don't think just this way. And we should be looking at things critically, examining issues from a variety of perspectives rather than just assume it has to all be in lockstep. So I think things like this seem to me to be lending themselves, like your podcast, your book, lending themselves well to the idea that, you know, our our DNA makeup does not mean we all have to do things one way, but yet there can be total solidarity because there is pushback, you know, from a lot of different angles. So I'm excited about this because I think it's shining light in an area that is needed across the board. I can see this as a pretty fun little graduation gift.
Yeah.
Coming up. It's perfect timing, right? You
know, let me speak on behalf of men,
that's
Karen.
That's what we're hoping.
Yeah. Let me ask on behalf of men for a minute. Where do you find men in this discussion? Where should men be in this discussion? Because I think often these days, while men may be trending more conservative politically, they're also siloing themselves and they're not reaching out. We're finding that young people are not desiring relationships. Birth rates are declining. I find that culturally also very interesting. Men seem almost, I don't know if the word is fearful or whatever, of women or vice versa. I don't know. Do you explore that much or think much about that?
Well, in the book, I mean, I'd encourage men can pick it up too, and I'm sure they'll learn some good tips from it as well. But I think you're right that there's cultural challenges right now for young men. And one of the programs we do anew is a gentleman showcase to honor the great men who are out there, because we see men often getting put down in society. And that our society functions better when we have mutual respect between the sexes.
Yes.
And so that means praising and holding up both great examples of men and women who are doing fantastic things on campus. So we highlight men who demonstrate service, respect, integrity. And I think that's one way we're trying to push this conversation forward.
I love it. I really appreciate you taking your time today to share with us. I know for our audience, it does deviate a little bit away from talking about just the, you know, the options that exist within Christian education. But this is a big piece because one of our biggest goals is getting our children as parents to a place where they can defend their faith, they can defend their beliefs, they can
free speech. You
know, free speech is a huge one. And so I see this as just such a neat tie-in. But I love too that it isn't just about Christianity if you don't want it to be. It's just about being confident and comfortable and forward thinking and being, and you know, just a way to intelligently speak about something that is important. Karen, I know we're going to put a lot of this information down in our show notes, but if you would not one more time mind sharing where you can be found, maybe on Instagram, Amazon, your book, just give a little bit of those details and we will include all that as well for anybody that is interested in finding you, starting a chapter, buying your book.
Wonderful. Well, we'd love to get any of your listeners or their children involved. So if you'd like to learn more about the organization, you can go to www.enlightenedwomen.org. On Instagram, we're at @enlightenedwomen. And then on Twitter, we're on @newnetwork. They can also follow me personally on Instagram at @karen.lips or on Twitter at @klips. And then you can find the book, You're Not Alone, The Conservative Woman's Guide to College, on Amazon.com. For students, our membership is only $5, so they can join our national network, whether they've got a chapter on their campus or not. So I encourage them to get involved, maybe make that first step, get involved, get on our email list, follow us on social media, and then we hope you'll be inspired to speak out, start a chapter, become a leader on your campus, because often it just takes one person to speak out. And then that really attracts an audience and you'll, you know, find your friend group and your community and a lot of great things will come from that. So, and I should also mention the podcast, which is available on Apple and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. It's called The Conservative Woman's Guide.
I have to say, if there's not a president of the enlightened men out there, I would like to nominate myself. That's a cool title, president of enlightened women. I mean,
it doesn't get
better than that, Karen. I'm going to steal that maybe. I'm going to go Google that when the show's over.
You know, who knew when I started this in college that this is where I would be at this stage. So
it's great to meet you, Karen. Thanks for your time today.
My young self.
Thank you so much for listening in on this episode. We're so glad to have you with us as always. We will put everything that we have talked about today in terms of links, information down in our show notes. We always appreciate the follows on social media. Check us out on Apple on iTunes, leaving us those reviews. Everything about that we appreciate so much. And as always, we will see you next week. Making the Leap is a podcast presentation courtesy of the Herzog Foundation. We'd love your feedback by rating us and commenting on the show.
And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Making the Leap.